way of life. How do we work with healings? Now, Olga Worrell works with healings a great deal. I think she's still around. She might have moved on. But her husband was quite effective. Is Olga still around, as far as you know, Sally?
As far as I know.
As far as I know. Well, Olga Worrell was born in Russia, and she came to the United States, and she worked with her husband, Ambrose Worrell, who was an engineer, with healing. And she had a center in Maryland where she was very effective, and they would send healings to people, you know, with their solar plexus, and they would do all sorts of wonderful things. Now, that's a joke. That's a joke. Phyllis, why is that a joke?
Because you don't send a healing.
And?
And because you're whole and perfect and complete.
You're whole and perfect and complete. That's what she teaches, you know. And you don't send a healing. But it's fun. It's fun. And it's okay. It's okay to play games of fun. But were those people dependent on Olga and on Ambrose for healing? Did they expect the healing? Did they say, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, wonderful center? Which is nice, you know. Now, how many of you know about Unity? You all know about Unity. Okay. How many of you know about the Silent Healing Ministry?
Well,
Silent Unity. I worked in the Silent Healing Ministry while I was training as a Unity minister in East Mountain, Missouri. Missouri! And as I was training there, we had May Rowland as our dictator. May Rowland was the toughest old broad you could ever want to know. She made us behave, our student ministers. This was before the days of automatic typewriters, before the days of computers and stuff. To begin with, us neophyte ministers, we did our lessons and all that stuff, but then we had to work in Silent Unity. We had to type the envelopes to send out to people, and the name had to be correct on the envelope, every envelope individually typed with the full name. Any mistake, it went in the wastebasket. There was no erasures, there was no cleanup, and if you had, at the end of the week, a lot of things in the wastebasket, your days in Silent Unity were done. So, those of us who were really diligent and cared a lot, we didn't have any waste. We thought, perfect lettering, perfect typing, perfect, and we did. Then, we were blessed with typing the letters. Letters on healing, letters on abundance, letters on harmony, letters on success, you know, the program. Okay, they had letters designed that way. Well, we had to say, dear Marcella Vogel, thank you for your letter asking for healing for your blah blah, and thank you for your donation of $50,000. I love you. And we see you whole and perfect now. You are expressing the love of Jesus in every bone of your body, and you are just fulfilled by the Christ Spirit within you. Okay, we type those things by hand. That was tougher than envelopes. But, you know, you had to be good when you did it. Then, when that was done, then you had to do all the other things they did. You had to go through their card file. Everything was on card files in big drawers, and they were at this height. And then you reached across here, and here was President Eisenhower, and here was this and that person, and this person and that person. I mean, they had a lot of famous people. Famous people asking for treatment and healing and so forth, Natalie Wood, and all these neat people, you know. So, many of them I had met previously in my work, and it was very fascinating. And then I met them subsequently, too. And I didn't say to them, I saw you in the Silent Healing Ministry, Father. That's another. But I'm telling you, they're already into another dimension of fabulous life. So, these people who call Silent Unity become dependent upon Silent Unity. And they become dependent on Silent Unity for a healing which, as Phyllis would say,
you don't need. It's already done.
You can see the answers.
I'm a puppeteer. But no, that's what she was saying. She just didn't know what I wanted her to say. Yeah. She's very good. But you see, you ask for a healing you don't need because you're already perfect. And you ask for help from somebody else to do for you what you must do for yourself. So, for you to be whole and perfect, you have to say, I am whole and perfect now. For you to be whole and perfect in any area of your body, you say, every organ, action, and function of my body is perfect right now. For you to be whole and perfect, you say, everything about my body is just magnificent. I feel fantastic. Hey, you know, I feel fantastic. In our seminars in Switzerland, I gave a responsibility in the master seminar to each student. As they went to their bed at night, they had to lie on their bed naked and take their hand and move it just a quarter of an inch above their skin and go over their entire body, because their hand is an energizer activity. And not to touch the body. If you touch it, no big deal, but attempt not to. Over your whole body, back and front and everywhere around, and bless your body. Say, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. You're energizing every cell of your body with the idea that you love it. I love you, 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 I love you. Go over your whole being and say, I love you, I love you. I like me, I like me, I like me. You're saying, this hand is shedding that love. This hand is vibrating that love. This hand is energizing it. Now, you don't have to do this. But when you start doing that, then all the cells of your body are harmonizing perfectly. And if you have an area where you want to concentrate, you just spend a little more time there. And you spend more time on your eyes, for instance, on your cheeks, on your face, on your body, on your genitals, or wherever they need it. But just spend a little time and love it. Now, if you have any healing need, do not recognize that you have a healing need. Recognize that the energy of your own self is manifested through your body. Now, why isn't your body, and don't play me now, why isn't your body whole and perfect right now? Why isn't your body whole? Because he hasn't been loving his body. He hasn't been loving it. He loves his hands, he loves his eyes, he loves his face, he loves this and that. But what he hasn't been loving, what he hasn't been loving is his total self. He hasn't been, all right, you just bought a new car, Anna.
All right.
You just bought a new Jaguar. Nice? Or what do you like?
Oh, Lexus.
Lexus. Aha! Beautiful. She bought a new Lexus. What color?
White.
She bought a new white Lexus. Now, what does Anna think about her white Lexus? She says, Adele, would you come look at my white Lexus? And she says, yes, 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 yes. And so Adele comes over and looks at it. And Adele lays her hand on the car and says, hey, that's a nice car. Get your hand off my car. Get your hand off. But you asked me to come look at it. But I didn't ask you to put your hand on my car. Get your hand off my car. Are you thinking good thoughts about my car? You know? Are you thinking good thoughts about my car? Think good thoughts about my car, right? You know, think good thoughts about my car. And why is she doing it? I mean, Adele is just a pure love. Everything she does, she's so innocent. She's so gentle, so serene about everything. And you don't want that on your car? That's perfect. You just say, whoosh, you know. Okay. What happens with your car? Your car is beautiful. You have it for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. Pretty soon, you don't have time to dust it every day as you do. You don't have time to go through it and vacuum it. You don't have time to take out every little stone that you step in there with your feet, you know. You don't have time to wash your windshields and to check the dashboard and all these other things. You don't have time to, there's many more things in the world to do than take care of my car. Why did you have time to do it in the beginning? Why did you have time to take care of your car so lovingly and so gently in the beginning? Because you loved it. You were in love with your new car. You were in love with your new husband. You were in love with your new wife. You were in love with the new baby that came. And then after a while, the baby yeah, in the middle of the night and suddenly fall out of love. But as long as you're in love, you can do everything. Okay, now, that new white Lexus will remain a new white Lexus if you put it in a clean room and leave it there, right?
Right.
Now, it won't be usable, will it? Can that new white Lexus remain a new white Lexus eternally in the clean room? Untouched, undriven. You know what a clean room is? It's a place where it does no dirt or dust or anything like that. It just is there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, will it wear out? No.
No.
I
don't think so.
No. Okay, now, what if you drive your Lexus around in this big stadium room, clean room, side of a stadium? Will it wear out? No. It's still clean and nice. It's still in a protective environment. Everything is careful, and as everything is careful, it remains that way. Okay, when do things start going wrong? Think about this. You are 8 years old, indestructible. You are 12 years old, indestructible. You are 18 years old, indestructible. You go to war, you're not going to get shot, you're not going to get in trouble, you're not going to have a problem. And then when do you become destructible? When are you fallible? When do you begin to fail in your body, in your mind? When you stop believing that you are indestructible? When you stop believing that you are fabulous? When you stop believing, when do you stop believing? When you start believing what society tells you. You got responsibilities. You must take care of your things. You must be careful of this. You can't go around making children and not being responsible for them. You can't go around having children and leaving them with mama, you know. You know? But they do. Now, why and when does this native innocence cease? It ceases when they no longer have the guidance of their parents and dependence on their parents or whomever. Then they start acting upon their own values that they have built up in their life. Put your clothes away. Do this, do that, do this. And then mama's not there anymore. They're with their wife or they're at college or something like that. If you want to know how kids have been brought up, just look at college kids and go into their college room. You'll see exactly how they've been brought up. Clothes strewn on the floor, hung up nicely, books laying here and there, books orderly on the desk, used whenever they wanted. You can see exactly how they're brought up, exactly how they're trained by their parents. Kids who are murderers, kids who are thieves, kids who are honest, kids who are beautiful, just like the parents trained them. Okay, when did our immutability, when did our condition of being untouchable cease to exist in our life? When we go on our own. When we go on our own, if we have been trained in this idea that we are immutable, that we are indestructible, indestructible, that we are eternal, that we are immortal, when we are trained in that, then wherever we are, we'll be that. Wherever we are, we'll be that. Now, why can children in the same family turn out differently? Mama loved him better than he loved me, you know? When did we say that? Why did Mama love you better than Mama loved the other one?
She never did our mama.
She never did, huh?
Not our mama.
Their mama didn't love anybody. No, their mama loved everyone equally.
She loved us all equally.
Yeah, and why? Why can you say that?
Because we felt it. And everything she did, she wanted.
Did you hear that? We felt it. We felt it. We felt that Mother loved us all equally. We felt that Mother expected the best out of all of us. Your sister gets better grades than you. No remarks like that. You're doing beautiful. I'm proud of the level of consciousness you're giving to your work. I'm proud of your level of genius. You're fantastic. But my sister's doing better. That's okay. That's your sister. She's doing wonderful because that's where she is in her consciousness. Now, you're here in your consciousness. Now, if you want to be a better person, then start saying, I am a good student. I'm a wonderful student. That's what your sister says. Your sister says I'm a wonderful student, and you can say that too. It's not that she's got a right to say it. It's just that that's what she says. Now, are you whole and perfect? Your sister says I'm whole and perfect, but you don't say that. You don't say that. Whenever they say, but my sister is better than I am, my sister is healthier than I am, my sister, why is it that I always get a cold and my sister doesn't have colds? Well, your sister doesn't want colds. Well, I don't want them either. But if you don't want them, then put the cause in motion that you don't have them. How do you put the cause in motion I don't have them? I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. But I have to run outside and go in the outhouse, you know, and you get cold when you're going outside and going in the outhouse in early days. Hey, think warm. But it ain't so. It's cold out there. Think warm. Think warm. Think warm. But Mama, that's not hot. That's the way it works. Think warm. Now, we can all sit around the fireplace and we can think warm and we can think, oh, so toasty, so nice, it's so, and the fireplace isn't even on. You know? You ever have a vision in your mind at night? You go to sleep, maybe a dream. You're dreaming that you're sitting around the fireplace with your feet all toasty warm and so forth. And that everybody's having a nice time and you're popping popcorn or doing whatever you're doing. And then you wake up, whoop, what happened to popcorn? Where did everything go? It was as real as anything could be. Now, if you had said, oh, it was a dream, I love the dream, pop, I'm back in it. And you can be back in it. Now, you're living your life, and you're saying, I'm whole and perfect. So you take this energy massage. I had everyone do it. What did you feel by the energy massage, Ellen, when you had the energy massage at, where was it?
Montebrey.
Montebrey.
Mm-hmm. I felt, first of all, very peaceful. Mm-hmm. And then I felt, yeah, powerful, energized. I felt good, and goosebumps about my whole body while not touching it. I mean, sometimes it just touches that when you're going backwards. But you prove a gentleness about yourself which you have never tried out before, because who is ever caressing yourself and you don't touch yourself? But it's like caressing, like a gift of love to your body, and it is a real special moment. And we did that every evening, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, everybody of us, and everybody had a real good time, a good experience. So I would say, I recommend it. And Sally, we talked about it, right? And maybe you have done some personal experience, you had some about it. Because when I spoke with Sally about it, it's, oh, yes, I do that with other people. But I understand how important it is for myself.
How did you feel the healing aspect of it?
Well,
you had no problems.
No, actually not. But you feel just balanced and peaceful and in whole and perfect.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you feel whole and perfect, I should put this on hold here. When you feel whole and perfect, what happens? When you feel whole and perfect, what happens? Go ahead. You're whole and perfect.
You are whole and perfect.
You are whole and perfect. When you feel whole and perfect, you are whole and perfect. Now, do you have to have a problem? Do you have to have an illness? Do you have to have something that needs to be healed? It's up to you whether you have to have it or whether you don't have to have it. Now, what are techniques of healing? We have a lot of games we like to play, and this energy massage is a game. If I can say, pow, pow, you know, and hit you on both cheeks, pow, pow, and say, you're whole and perfect. Yeah. How many of you have ever heard of Catherine Kuhlman?
Yeah.
Catherine Kuhlman's quite a dramatic lady. She's long been gone now, but she was in her late 70s, 80s. And she was conducting services at the Shriner Auditoriums and 5,000 people and more like that. And she would say, Someone up in the left audience has got a cancer. Someone over here has got this. And they'd come down on stage. And she would say, are you ready to be healed? And they'd say, yes. And she'd say, in the name of Jesus, you're healed. And then the person would fall back into the arms of the waiting helpers. And now, that's a technique, isn't it? Now, does it work? It can work. And what did Jesus say? Jesus said, go and tell what?
No one.
No one. Go and tell no one. Why do you go and tell no one? Because you do not want anyone to know that you had anything that needed to be healed. You do not want anyone to put the cause in motion on the negative side of the coin. You go and you say, I'm home perfect. I'm fantastic. What a lovely day it is. Hey, you want to go to the beach? Oh, you bet. I feel so good. I feel so vital and so dynamic. Hey, you want to go to the beach? Nope, don't feel like going to the beach. Why don't you feel like going to the beach? You're sick or something? Nope, I just don't feel like going to the beach. I am going to play tennis. Oh, all right. Yeah. Why aren't you going to the beach? I am sitting at home reading a book. I am sitting at home reading the book Quiet Healing Zone. I am filling my mind with all these positive, lovely statements of truth about myself. I am having a ball. But you should go to the beach with me. Hey, I'm master of my life. I want to read the book. Now, true, it's always fun to go to the beach with you. It's always fun to do that, but I am staying at home reading the book. Now, in line with that, why don't you come with me to the beach? No, no. It's another tack. Oh, no. Come on, you go to the beach with me. Won't you go to the beach with me? Yeah. We're going to go down, jump in the surf, and play around, have a good time. Why don't you come along? Doesn't anybody want to come with me to the beach? And no? No? Why? 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 And you're not intimidated by me. You are not intimidated that you have to give me an answer. You do not have to tell the world why you do anything. You do it because you choose. And you're the master of yourself. I am going to try to make you subject to my will, subject to my choice, subject to me. The world is going to make you subject to its will. Don't you realize it's cold outside, and that if you don't put a coat on, you're going to get sick? Don't you realize that? And you say, nope. Hey, Herb, I want you to realize my name is Marcella, Marcella Vogel, and I'm a Scandahoobian. I'm from Scandinavia. My dad dove under the ice, and he swam to the hole beyond it and came out. My dad was in there, and he taught us kids to do it with him. He didn't make us go as far as he did, but he didn't make us go anywhere. He just taught us to go in freezing cold Norwegian ice and just have a ball. He taught us not to be touched by the temperature, because we're Scandahoopians. We are masters of ourselves. What are you talking about? I should get a cold because I go outside in the cold. No way. My God. And you say 20 below zero, that's something terrible? Oh, my goodness sakes. We do that in St. Louis every winter, you know. We think that's just barefoot time, you know. We go running in the snow. You know what you do? Something like that. Okay, now. Believe it. Believe it. I often speak about these Tierra del Sol, Tierra del Fuego people at the tip of South America when the early pioneers came around in their boats. They would stop there before they'd go around the straits. And when they stopped, what did they see? They saw the native Indians living there, naked. Naked native Indians right next to the South Pole, virtually. Now, they weren't naked because they had nothing to wear. They were naked because they weren't cold. And they would have a cape that they would wear, a beautiful animal cape with lots of pockets in it. And in that, they would put the fish that they would catch. And so they would go into the ocean, and they would catch fish in the ocean. And their children would be on the beach, right by the ocean, playing in the water as though it were in the summertime. Because they did not think it was cold. They did not have cold as their thought. You see, it's all in the mind. It's all in the mind. Now, those are human beings, just like you and me. They're human beings. They didn't think of it as cold. Think of the penguins. You know the penguins? What do the penguins do? They go around their bare feet all the time. You know? And what do penguins do with little babies? They take their big tummy and they flop it over the little baby to keep him warm while the baby stands on their feet. Then they waddle along, you know. Papa's taking care of the babies. And then the baby says, I want to play. And he slips out from under Papa's tummy. And he slides down into the ocean. And he swims around. Papa says, come back out of here. You're not ready for that yet. You got to get a little stronger, a little more power. But that's good. And the bird goes, shakes itself and gets back under Papa's tummy again. How? How? It's all in the mind. It's all in the mind. You see the birds holding onto the trees with their tiny feet, with the infinitesimal, whatever it is, skin or whatever it is that's over their blood vessels and stuff, and they're not cold. Well, they're cold-blooded animals. No, they're not. A bird is a warm-blooded animal. A lizard is a cold-blooded animal. What does a lizard do? When it gets cold, it just stops there and stays right where it is. It's just not moving. When it warms up, okay, here we go again. Same with a snake and other things like that. You see? So think about that. Think about that. It is the mind. Now, we can play the games. We can play the Catherine Kuhlman games, which are lovely. And did Jesus heal people? Not really. Jesus went up to him and said, do you believe it can be done? They said, yes, Jesus, yes, Lord. Oh, yes, Lord. Then it is done unto you according to your belief. Read your Bible. Why didn't Jesus heal people by his hand? Because it wasn't important to him. Here were 40 people around Jesus with problems. And you'd think he was a nice guy and would heal them. But he didn't. Jesus had the leper colonies. He had all of the hospitals, if you might call it that, where people were ill and stuff. He didn't go there and heal people, but he taught them. He taught them, it is done unto you according to your belief. He said, my teaching will stay with you forever. That's the Christ consciousness. It will be with you forever. I will not. I, the man Jesus, will not be with you forever, and I really don't care, because I'm doing my own thing. I'm just here as a teacher on this dimension at this time. On my next dimension that I'm on, I'm probably whatever, you know. But remember that. You're playing the game here as a human being, not to have me say, here's my knowledge. Now you're a genius, you're a super genius, you're wise beyond all measure. You have my wisdom, you have my intelligence, you have my knowledge. I'm going to take the chip. You know how the Star Trek is, you know, plant a little chip up here with all knowledge. Now, tell me, what's a million times 42 divided by 67 plus 18? And you say, 39. And how did you do that? Well, I have my little chip up here. But you can create the chip that does that. You can also be aware of what does that. Because you are infinite knowledge. You are infinite allness. You don't need the chip. But the chip is convenient. Hey, you don't need the car. You speak your word, you're wherever you want to be. What did John from Livingston Seagulls say, huh? Remember? You ever read John from Livingston Seagulls? Well, remember when he was with Chang? And he said, Chang, how did you get from here to there so quickly? And Chang says, that's off. Perfect speed is what? Anyone know? Perfect speed is being there. Perfect speed is being there. Perfect speed is being there. A car can't get us there. A car is just a fun toy to play with. Our body is just a fun toy to play with. And the more we limit our body by saying it needs a car, it needs clothing, it needs to have food, it needs to have shelter, it needs whatever we want to have it need, then it needs it. But when we stop saying that, when we say, I'm walking on cool, wet moss as we go over the fire, we're untouched by the fire. If we are a Tierra de Fuego Indian and we say, oh, what a lovely day, it's only 60 degrees below zero. Wow, fantastic, you know, let's go and do this. Or you go into Africa and you go into the bush tribes. The bush tribes, too, they have no clothing. They just lay on the ground at night. Now, the temperature gets cold at night. Gets down to maybe 50, 60 degrees, which is cold when you're out there with nothing keeping you warm. And then during the day, it's 80 to 100 degrees or 110. And their body temperatures vary and adjust, and they're perfectly comfortable. It's all in the mind. Why have they been trained that way? Why does a dog smell things that you cannot smell? Why does a dog hear things that we cannot hear? Because they have developed their auditory and their sensory activity. Why is it that a blind person can see and sense and do things that a seeing person cannot? Because they have trained that facility within them to do it. You think, how terrible it would be to be blind. I wouldn't be able to see. And well, of course not. But you don't say how terrible. You say, if blindness is an experience I have, then let me increase my others. I was with Thelma Moss at the UCLA program, and she was showing us how blind people can see. And she had this one blind girl. There was a group of people. This was just one of them. She got up there with her seeing eye dog, and she sat down at the front table, and her dog was wandering around being loved by everybody. And she says, please don't touch my dog. I don't want my dog to become accustomed to other people. My dog is my dog, my eyes. So please, don't touch her. Just love her if you wish, but don't touch her. And Princess, come up here, please. And so the dog came up and sat by her side. She knew that the people were touching the dog. She knew that they were doing this, and she wanted that dog to be sensitive to her alone. Then they put construction paper that you use in school, that you cut up, and it's a nice, brilliant color to it, solid through the paper. And they put it on the table in front of her. They put black and red and orange and green and brown and white and blue and all the colors. And they said, okay, now what color is this? So she put her fingers on it. This is green. See, this is construction paper right here. Oh, no, it's just green paper. But anyhow, construction paper is a little thicker. But she put her fingers on it and said, this is green. This is orange. This is yellow. This is blue. And I cannot tell you for sure which this is and this is, because black and white were the same. Black is all color, and white is all color to a blind person. And in reality, that's the case too. So how could she tell? How could she tell that that was those colors? Because she had trained her sensitivity to know. Now, do you see with your eyes? Sally, do you see with your eyes?
Inner and outer.
Inner
and outer.
No. You don't see with your outer eyes, if you excuse me. You don't see with your outer eyes. You know why? Your outer eyes receive impressions of what's going on out here, and it sends the impressions to your brain, and your brain interprets what it sees. Now, what does your ear do? The same thing. It receives vibrations out here. How can I receive an impression of what I'm seeing around me, the chairs, the building, the people? How can I receive that? I receive that because I have this mental harmony with my world. I created it. I created everything. Now, I look at her shirt, and I see it as a pink or reddish shirt or mauve or whatever color, and you look at it, and you see it as perhaps a different color. Now, around her pan here, it's a red color. Now, the blouse, the shirt, is different color than that. How do you perceive it? Some people cannot see red and green. They cannot differentiate between the two. Now, let's just take that for a minute. Can a person who is called colorblind ever see red and green? And the answer is no. A person who is colorblind can never, ever, 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 ever see red and green. Now, you are colorblind, we'll say. Okay? Are you colorblind? What do you say to me?
No.
Are you colorblind?
No, she will not accept that she is colorblind. She has difficulties perceiving red and green, but she will not say, I'm not colorblind. I'm just not tuned in with my sensitivities to recognize the red and the green, but I'm not colorblind. I can see red, 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 I can see green. And she is impressing this upon her consciousness like a blind person who sees things that they didn't see before. Because the ability to do it is always there. The ability to see the red, the ability to see the green is always there, but we have not demanded it of ourselves. Now, the ability to be whole and perfect, which is our reality, is within each one of us. Each one of us are whole and perfect. Each one of us are the divine idea of who and what we are. Do you understand that? We are that divine idea. But you and each others have accepted what the world says, that you're limited.
By the time you're 40, you'll wear glasses, you know. And by the time you're 50, you'll do this. And you know, when I was a kid, my grandfather died when he was late 60s. He lived a good, long life. He lived a very full life. By the time he was late, he did. I mean, here we're in our 70s, in our 80s, in our 90s. And do we consider ourselves living a good, long life? We're just beginning. How old are you? 18, huh? How old are you? He may be 75 years old. He may be 100 years old. We have no idea. Because he thinks he is youthful, dynamic, alive, and vital. Now, we have a very dear student who is presently 87 years old. And her name is Dorothea Zimmerman. Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman. And she's been a metaphysician for many, many years. Well, Dorothea had mentors. And Dorothea always sort of worshipped somebody else because they were better than she was, you know. They could do things she couldn't do. Well, her last mentor was in his 80s, perhaps. And the home in which they were living caught fire. And she tried to go in. She was in her 70s. She tried to go in and pull him out of the fire. And she couldn't. And she got burned over virtually 80 or 90% of her body, really burned. And they had to pull her out. And they took her to the hospital. And they did skin grafts and disc graft and other things and other things. And after a number of years, they had her all back together again. All the burn was gone. You look at her skin, and she just looks gorgeous. She's just a fabulous lady. Well, she's 87, and she says, I think young, I think dynamic, I think fantastic. And she had a church. And she says, I really don't feel like operating a church. She says, I go to help the elderly. I take them sweet rolls, the day-old sweet rolls from the bakery. What a nice lady, him. And, you know, to help them, and these 70 and 80-year-old people who can't get out of their house and walk, I take it to them. And so she gets in her little red Jeep and she goes, bing, 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 driving around just like a banshee. And she's fantastic. Now, she had this burn, but that's no longer in her consciousness. She is a student from the uni, unfortunately for her. And so she invited us into her home. And we went into her home and we said, why have you got all these burned objects in here, reminding you of something that's past? Well, do you know what they're all about? Yes. Then why keep them? Out. Clean up your place. Clean up your house. Clean up your consciousness. And so she started cleaning it up, and she's still doing it. And she has lots to get out. And now she can start walking around her little apartment. But she's starting to change her consciousness. She's starting to change her attitude. And she is going around being a healer. She's going around to her relatives and saying, hey, you're whole and perfect. You're fantastic. You're whole and perfect. Now, is she being a healer or is she being a divine being? You see, our talk about healing is a great talk. And it's a great thought. But really, everything is whole and perfect. What does she do? What does she do? She's a fantastic lady. She had never been ordained, even in her own church. And so I said, Dorothea, we are going to ordain you in your church that you have given to us. And so we took her out to the ocean, to La Jolla, and we had a lovely dinner. And then we went over to the coffee shop, what was it, Starbucks, and a chocolate shop. She wanted chocolate, and so we bought chocolate and the coffee. And then she stepped down the step out of Starbucks and went boom, it's two steps. But she went crunch down on the concrete. And she broke her glasses and cracked her skull and bumped her knee and did everything. And there's a bunch of motorcyclists going by, and they stopped for this lady in distress. And they all ran over, the brawny motorcyclists, their big leather jackets, and they grabbed, there's something we can do. They set her in a chair, all tender in heart. Starbucks staff came out and said, here's a chair, here's a table. And all love. And so I said, Dorothea, how are you doing? I knew how she was doing. And she says, I'm just fine. And then she tried to put her glasses on, but they were all, bumped up. And then she sat there for a few minutes. We gave her a drink of water. And all of us were saying, you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect, you're whole and perfect. And so here she was after this rather interesting tumble at 87 years of age. And we said, you're whole and perfect. So she got up and she started to walk with us. And she favored a knee a little bit that she had really bumped on the ground. And we said, yeah, I think we'll go to the emergency ward and have you checked out just to make sure that you're perfect like you think you are. That's great. So we went in there at 3 in the afternoon. And at 2 in the morning, rush emergency job. At 2 in the morning, the doctor came in to check her knee. And I was there with her, talking to her positively all this time. And so the doctor checked her knee and said, hey, you're okay. You can leave, but your knee's got a little swelling. We can take out the fluid there, and it'll heal faster. Or we can leave the fluid in, and it'll heal good by itself, And she says, well, I think you should probably take the fluid out. So they got in there, big plunger, and taking all that fluid out of her knee. And she said, tough old lady, really a fantastic girl. And so I said, Dorothea, is that enough? They want to take a little more. She said, good heart. And they took some more out, and it really wasn't that much, but it sounds great, So... they put a bandage on it, and they said, now, what do you want? Do you want a wheelchair, you want a walker, or you want crutches? And she says, I'll take them all. And so they had to put her in a wheelchair to get her out of the hospital, out of the emergency ward. But then afterwards, she says, I don't want it. And they gave her the walker, and she did just fine. And so she lives on the second floor. And we said, Dorothea, we can't let you go and live on the second floor by yourself there without having someone watch over you for a day or two while you're... She says, I'm perfect now, I'm just fine. I said, Dorothea, you're going to the mountain with us, and you're going to come and live with us for a day or two. So how many weeks?
5 weeks.
So 5 weeks later, she enjoyed it so much, She was driving our golf cart, she was doing everything, just having a ball. But she enjoyed it so much she didn't want to leave, which is fine. But whole and perfect. Whole and perfect. She walked on that leg the very next day. Whole and perfect. Oh, she played a good game. And she loved it. And I can't blame her. But she was whole and perfect. We all saw her whole and perfect because that was her reality and that was her experience. Now, what do they say about old people? Old people shouldn't fall. They're liable to break their hip or do this or do that. We name these things. We claim these things. We zero in on these things and we experience these things. That's the silliest thing in the world to do. The silliest thing in the world. All is mental. All is our mind. You can do this energy massage and you'll feel just great. You can do a number of other types of things and you'll feel just great too. But you have to keep doing it. You have to keep doing it. You have to keep doing the energy massage. You have to keep doing the energy massage. Hey, you have to keep doing the mental thing too. You have to keep saying, I'm whole and perfect. 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 And you're walking along, and all of a sudden you twist your ankle a little bit. I'm whole and perfect. 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 And it is so. It is so. Instantly. When you speak your word, when you claim the truth about yourself, when you allow only the truth to be manifest, you're whole and perfect. Everything about you is whole and perfect. Your body, your legs, your arms, your head, your hands, your beingness is whole and perfect. Are you strong enough to do that? What about your kids? Are they worth seeing as whole and perfect at all times?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But remember, what they say in the airplanes. If there is a drop in pressure, take the air oxygen mask and put it on your face, and then help someone who needs help, your child or someone else. Do yourself first. First you say, I am whole and perfect, and then you say to them. This is what a practitioner does. This is what a mentor does. This is what a person who is working with other people does. First, you recognize your own wholeness, your own perfection, and then you see the rest of the world perfect. For if you do not recognize your own perfection first, you cannot see them whole and perfect. If you have dirty eyes, if you have dirty thoughts, and you know what I'm talking about, if you have thoughts in your consciousness of dirty stuff, if you have done stupid things when you were a kid, you expect your kids to do stupid things too. Don't. You learned better. Now that's over with. Now the next generation is coming up as whole and perfect. The next generation is coming up with all of our brilliance, with all of our fantastic qualities, with all of the beautiful things that we are. The next generation doesn't have to suffer what do they say of their father? The sins of their fathers? Wouldn't that be something? If every generation had to suffer the sins of their fathers, remember, wouldn't that be something? Just imagine the people of Germany. The Germans in the Second World War were tough people. They were going around shooting Americans. Can you imagine that? They were going around shooting British and other Allied countries. They were the Axis country. They were the Axis, the ugly, ugly country. And they were going doing these things. Well now, what were they doing? They were doing what their government asked them to do. They were honorable citizens of their country. They were following what their government asked them to do. Now when we send our boys to Vietnam or Korea or any other place, Second World War, the government says, serve your country, Uncle Sam needs you. You know that? And so you serve. And you are to kill the Japanese because they are evil people. A month before, they were good people, but now they're evil people all of a sudden, you know, because they're the enemy, okay? So you're going to kill them. And you've been raised as killer. Now you are the ugly people. We are the ugly people who are killing somebody else. We are the ugly people who are defending ourselves or who are defending for someone else. You see, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work to call names. It doesn't work to say that somebody is evil and somebody is good. They are all, we don't want to say God's children. They are all divine. They are not children. They are divine. You are God. So that means they're your children. And you go to war against your children? Woof! You got a problem, you know? So, speak your word that all humanity is divine. And speak your word that all is in divine order. And speak your word that there are no evil people. Genocide, what are other words for that sort of stuff, where nations kill off their own people and things like that. How sad. But that's not bad. That's not good. But when we think about it, we empower it to have virtue or lack of virtue. So, hey, this is really good. Peace begins with me. Peace begins with me. I look at all the nations of the world and I see it in peace. Now, when I look at the Russians, yeah, the Russians too, when I look at the Japanese and I look at the Germans during the Second World War. How did I see them? I had a buddy in Germany when I was growing up in school, and I pen pal, and I wrote to him regularly. He's a nice guy, had a German name. He wore silly German school clothes, which we in America had different stuff, you know. And he sent me his picture. It was one of those sepia tone pictures, you know, in a sort of a brownish color. And I'll never forget him. I don't remember his name, but I'll never forget him. I can see that picture before me now. His name was Heinz. His name was Heinz Schmidt. And he was a real great guy, real great guy. And then the Second World War came along, and we were both the same age. So that meant he would have been in the military for the Germans. That meant that I would have had to go and try to shoot him if I had to go over to Germany and, you know, fight the war. But I never put that in my consciousness. I never put that in my consciousness. And did you put in your consciousness that there is any person in the world that needs to be at peace? Then peace begins with you. Happiness begins with you. Love begins with you. Wholeness begins with you. What about these two spring chickens here, huh? How long are they going to be with us?
Forever.
10 years, 50 years, 1,000 years. Every day, you're going to look younger and younger and younger because you're going to feel younger and younger and younger. Every day, you are going to get up and be dancing and having a great time because you feel good. Your body is perfect. Your mind is perfect. Your eyes are perfect. Your ears are perfect. You're fantastic. Now, do you think if they go around thinking those thoughts that they're going to get sick? No way. Do you think that they're going to get tired? No way. Do you think that Fred Astaire is still going to be your model, huh? Have you ever danced with Fred Astaire?
No.
Mentally?
No.
Mentally?
No.
Who did you dance with?
My husband.
Well, good for your husband. And what about you, Thelma?
My wife. I never had a desire to dance with Fred Astaire.
You never had a what?
I never had a desire to dance with Fred Astaire.
Tough to play games when they won't play the game. Okay. Whenever I see Powell, what's your name?
Jane Powell?
Jane Powell, or the other dancers with Fred Astaire.
Ginger Rogers.
Whenever I see Ginger Rogers, and I see anyone dancing with her, I am dancing with her. And I am doing all those steps that Ginger is doing with me. And it's wonderful. When I was
do you do them physically?
What?
Do you do them physically or mentally?
Well, mentally, physically, I do it. No. When I was a youngster, my wife and I used to dance with the Walter Joseph Choraleers on television and on stage and so forth, and we would sing, and we just had a great time. You know, we were just very outgoing beings. And so many times, she would get tired, believe it or not, and I never did. And so there were always women waiting to dance. And some of them were very good, and they made me look very good. And others were not so good, and I made them look better. But always it was wonderful. Always it was great. I had a friend, Edith Mary, from Andromeda in Minnesota. And Edith Mary is a lovely lady. She's now down in Laguna Hills. But Edith Mary was a very rotund lady and head of the school food service for Minneapolis. And so we would go to dances after our church programs and what have you. And she was supposed to be in charge of me because she was the head of the church pastoral committee, you know. And so we would dance, but she would wear clogs. You know what clogs are? Those wooden things you have on your feet. And so I'd be dancing with her, and I'd be swinging her around in polkas. We'd be dancing these polkas, and her feet would be flying out, and her clogs would almost kill different people on the floor. But she never touched the ground, so she didn't need the shoes, you know. But and she's a little shorty. But, you know, when I got her in my arms, you know how I get you guys in my arms. And we just danced. And, you know, she never got tired. She never got tired because she never touched the floor.
Shoes fly.
No, it didn't bother her at all. Her shoes always came back to her, but it didn't bother her at all. And we had such a good time. But the thing is, she never got tired. Now, others got tired. Others got tired because they thought they were putting a lot into it. Now, we need never be tired. And you, where are your husbands? Are they moved on to other dimensions?
Moved on, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, then it's time that you start finding some dancing partners. Yes. Now, I'm going
to
have this.
Do I have to wear a clock?
You wear whatever pleases you. You're going to have Phyllis find you some dancing partners. So when you get up. Now, what kind of music do you like to dance to?
I don't care. Just any kind. Waltzes.
But you want to dream a little.
Oh, all right.
Dreamtime music. Who were some of the musicians of our era? Mm-hmm.
Oh, good grief.
Good grief. I don't know that group. Come on.
He didn't laugh very long.
That's right. But
he was getting mad.
But, well, Mel Torme is one, you know. And, of course, and,
We haven't given
him
a thought for a while.
Barnes
Well,
Tommy Dorsey,
Benny
Goodman. Tommy Dorsey,
Benny
Goodman.
Good man.
Right, right. Benny Goodman. Goodman. Is she now how it comes back?
Oh, sure.
Now,
you have to think about it a little bit.
Yeah, but that's because you haven't been paying attention to it lately. Now, what's
going on? I haven't been around lately.
No, no.
What?
104.9.
Now, just remember.
Oh, yeah, that's fabulous.
As we are playing this game with them, and you think, what a lot of foolishness. As we are playing this game with them, what are they doing? They are moving into a time in their life when they were dynamic, fantastic women dancing up a storm and just swirling around in their big swoopy skirts, you know, and the boys in their zoot suits and stuff like that with their long chains and, you know, whipping them around and stuff like that. And it was a time of craziness, just like it is today in many of the dancing activities. But the more you think about that, the more you let that be part of a living activity, not a memory, but a living nowness, you revitalize your thinking, you revitalize your memory, you revitalize your body, you revitalize yourself until you experience and express this youthfulness, this charm, this magic, which is you. And whenever anything else comes into the picture, you just return to that dance in your mind, in your thought. And if you have a chance to dance with somebody who really dances those things, that's great. Maybe each other, you know. But you just have fun. Now, don't laugh. Don't laugh. My sisters often dance with themselves. With each other. Themselves. But this is part of it. We want to enter into this mental experience of thinking these things, living these things, and being these things. Yes.
Where we go, the men are too old to dance like that, and the young ones are too young.
Now, just a minute.
Yeah.
Just a minute. The men who dance with you are whatever age you think you are. And if you think that you're 38, you think you're 28, you think you're 48, the men are that same age.
Oh, awesome.
One of my dear friends who was starting the Saddleback University College in Southern California with me years ago, Harry Wandley. He was the superintendent of schools in Humboldt, California County. And he married Arletha, who was the head of the kindergarten program in Humboldt County. And they married and lived together a long time. They retired and moved to leisure world, and I met him. We were working on projects. He was just always active. And Harry was 80-some years old, 86, 87, and his wife was 86, 87, and she was just a terrible, terrible lady. She decided to quit. Bye, Harry. And she took off to another dimension. And Harry says, what am I going to do? I have no sex partner anymore. What am I going to do? You know, I'm not done living. I've still got a lot of life ahead of me. And people say, Harry, you at 87? You? Of course, I still operate perfectly, you know. I'm still a perfectly healthy man in every way. And so then he watched through his window the neighbor lady, who was a charming lady, and he went over to see her, And he says, well, you lost your husband. How about that? Well, I lost my wife, you know. How about if we get together? She said, why not? She enjoyed a relationship, and he enjoyed it. And they didn't get married because they didn't want to mess up their inheritance activity for their children. But they lived together in their own houses. And then they shared together. And this went on for another 10 years. 10 years! And he's 97.
Wow.
And, hey, there's no reason why not. If you read the Bible about Sarah, you know, and many other things, it's fascinating. But the point is, you're as young as you feel you are, as you think you are. And you're as young as the people you associate with in your mind. And if you're going to go to an old folks home and associate with old folks in an old folks home, you're going to be an old folks. And if you're going to associate with the young kids, then you're going to be a little out of your style, too, because that's not quite what you have in mind, the teenagers, you know, or the young adults. But
they do pretty good around the young ones.
Oh, they do. Well, congratulations, girls. I'm glad to hear that. But this is consciousness. Now, what did she say? She said they do pretty good around him. Now, what is it that they do good? Do they teach the young ones how to be loving? How to be gentle, how to be caring. Do they teach the young ones how to think thoughts of positive living, think thoughts of wholeness, think thoughts of peace? Do they teach the young ones, and how do they teach it? You be loving, you be... No, they don't do that. They teach it by being that themselves, by being understanding when a problem comes up. And they say, hey, you just were angry at her. Why were you angry at her? Well, Barbara, she did. Yeah, but why were you angry at her? That doesn't have to make you angry just because she did this. Yeah, but hey, you're so brilliant. You're so wonderful. You're so fantastic. You let other people control your thinking of how and why you do things? Hey, I wouldn't give away power over me to my emotions of feeling angry or happy. I am the master of myself, and I would... What's your name? Your name is Socrates. Your name is Socrates. Socrates never told people what to do. He merely asked them questions about what they were thinking about. And he said, why are you thinking that way? What causes you to think that way? Are you the master of your thinking yourself, or are you following their thinking because you're just a clone that has no brain of your own, you know? See, it's a nice word, a clone that has no brain of your own. Now, we are not clones. We are all masters here. We are all the leaders of our life, the leaders of our community, the leaders of our world. We are all the most dynamic, the most powerful, the most wonderful people in the entire universe. Now, all we have to do is recognize it. All we have to do is recognize it.
Yes.
It is so. It is so, and
is.
Now. And you see, when you put that cause in motion, great things happen. Now, I want you all to just play a game with me now. Everybody want to play a game with me now?
No.
What? What?
No.
My pussycat doesn't want to play a game with me. Okay, now. Okay, well, here's what the game is. Here's what the game is. The game is... There are two hotheads over here, a young man and a young woman, they want to get married. I think it's a young man and a woman. It might be two men or two women, but whatever. A young man and a young woman, they want to get married. Maybe, well, they're going to be married. They're probably being married now. And they're going to have the banquet and have the dance. What's that?
New York, they have to go to?
Hold a game.
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, I'm sorry. Okay, now, they're going to, perhaps they're getting married right now. What is time? You brought the right time. And so they have an afternoon wedding, maybe 4 o'clock. And so in about an hour, they'll be getting married. And they'll say, I love you because you come to me with nuts of love. You like my singing, don't you? Come on, you do it. Come on. Because you come to me with nuts of love. The world will always know our hearts are true. Been a long time since I've done that, but it's fun. Now, and then the minister will say, do you? And she says, my God, yes. And the minister will say to him, do you? And you say, I can't wait. I have been patient. I have done what my mother asked me to. Not fool around until I say the sacred word, I do. Okay. And they say, wow, what a different couple this is than normally run into around here. So, it's a good couple, as you can tell. Now, they're going to be coming here for their banquet. And when they come here for their banquet and their cake cutting and their marriage dance, you know, I don't know, it's not a Greek wedding, is it? And when they come here for this very special ceremony, and then after the ceremony, what's going to happen? They're going to go to their hotel or whatever. They're going to go on their honeymoon. And everybody else is going to go home on their honeymoon. So, now, how long is this wedding going to last? How long is this marriage going to last? This particular marriage, how long is it going to last?
Forever.
Forever? And you said?
As long as it's supposed to.
Yeah. Look, I commit myself to you until death do us part. Now, that's what they said. They don't have to. They can write their own marriage vows. They can say, I choose to marry you as long as I feel good about our relationship. You know? That's what they mean. But now, not as long as it's supposed to. It is immortal. Let's just mess them up. And let's just say that they're staying together forever, that they love each other forever, and that their marriage is, not forever, but their marriage is a human relationship as long as they have their human togetherness together. Okay? Now, do you think that would work? Do you think we have the right to speak that for them? Or what do you think we should say for them? What blessing do you think we should give them? Do you think we should say to them, I bless this marriage with eternal love, with eternal stability, eternal joy, and eternal peace. I bless this marriage with many wonderful children. I bless this marriage with years and a lifetime of happiness.
Are you smoking your cigarette again?
I bless this marriage with eternal happiness. I bless this marriage with understanding, with caring for one another, with being the ideal marriage in all the universe. I bless this marriage because I am blessed by knowing that it's taking place. And I am blessed by realizing that the world is going to be honored by the children that they have. Because the children they have will be raised in happiness and harmony, in love and peace. The children they have will be raised as geniuses, expressing their divinity, expressing their wonderment. They will have children who will have the dignity and the wonder that they can be. The Kennedy children were raised with a lot of dignity and wonder, but they went afoul a little bit. But the point is, they were a family that respected the family. They were a family that stuck together. They were a family of magic boys and girls. Magic children who each aspired to greatness, and some reached it. Now, I see all of their children aspiring to greatness and reaching it with dignity, with honor, with integrity, with love, with peace. I see them right now living a life of eternal joy, eternal peace, eternal health, and eternal oneness.
It's done. I heard a minister once say that. When I marry someone, they stay married. And at the time, many years ago, I thought that was arrogant.
When I marry someone, they stayed married.
The word when it's asked to be spoken.
Mm-hmm. Now, you see what a role you as a minister or you as a human being speaking about others has? Now, every single person on the face of the earth is a minister. We minister first to ourselves, and then we minister to others. We don't have to minister to others, but we minister to ourselves. I am whole and perfect, therefore I see you whole and perfect. You mind? Not at all. I am rich, therefore I see you rich. You mind?
Not at all.
You see, I always, you like that, I always see myself first in this magnificence, and then I see everyone else the same way. Now, do you have that ability? Do you have that opportunity? Do you have that condition in your life to be whole and perfect under all circumstances? Do you have that condition in your world? Now, what are your children?
Geniuses.
Geniuses.
They're geniuses. Isn't it wonderful? The microphone picks it up when I give the cues in here. But what are your children? Huh?
Geniuses.
Geniuses.
All of you are geniuses.
Right, right. And anybody else here? You got any children?
I sure do.
Wow, I like that. Are they all what?
They are wonderful geniuses.
Ha! How about just straight geniuses?
They're geniuses.
They're geniuses. Are you with kids too? You're kidless. But you're a nice guy.
I'm just up for adoption.
Oh, he's up for adoption. Oh, he's up for adoption. All right. All of our children are geniuses when we call them that. And as we propound that, say, you're geniuses, you're geniuses, you're geniuses, you're geniuses, so they are. And so they express in their life. I've done a lot of baptisms. And in my baptisms, I've had a lot of fun. Because, for instance, one of the baptisms that I did in a church in New York, the minister was one of our students, and he was appealing to the total audience, you know, the Jesus Christ audience, too, which was wonderful. And he would say, you, the mother and father of that child, you are responsible to make sure that child grows up in wholeness and perfection. You're responsible to make that child... And I thought, oh, and I followed it. And he asked me, he says, Herb, okay, now you do your thing. And I took the child in my arms. And I said, you are a genius. The world has been waiting for you, and you're ready to do it. You're fantastic. You're glorious. You're the most magnificent little person in the whole world. I am so delighted and so proud and so blessed to hold you in my arms. Because what you're doing is you're opening up the doorway for all of the people, all of the world, to have a better, more complete life. And who knows, you may be the president. Although I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But if you were the president, you'd be the greatest president because you'd be gentle and loving and caring. And you would treat every person as a gentle, loving, caring person. Now give it back. But she wouldn't take it. I said, here's your kid. She said, no, you didn't. You said, keep going. And there were six of them. And I'd go here, and then here, and here, and here. And each one, I would say something different. Whatever came to my mind, whatever loving thoughts came to my mind. And the parents didn't want to take the kid back each time. I had to keep on going with beautiful comments, you know, which I didn't mind at all. And then when I was in Africa, in Nigeria, the people told me that I had a baptism for, what is it, about eight kids? Like that. So we had these eight kids come up there. We had the certificates all made out for them, really nice. And so the kid comes up. And they had prepared flower petals and water and so forth for me. And so I baptize you as a beautiful expression of God. You are God, living, breathing, moving, as a fantastic... And the name was very difficult to pronounce. And so I said to the mother, and what name have we given this child? And the mother would say, and I'd say, and that name means, and then I would say what my heart would say that name meant. That name means golden child. Child of love, child of joy, child of peace, child of magnificence. This child is a fabulous being. And, of course, I'd go through all of them. And every one of them, you get sort of, souped up, ready to go. Revved up, that's a good word. And so I finished with all of them. And I was just high myself. And I didn't want to go further here. I might get just feel high like that, too. But that's good. And so then, take my children. Go on. Then the minister said to me, Herb, the parents want to be baptized too. So all the parents that wanted to be baptized, we had, 20, 30 of them coming up to be baptized. And fortunately, I had a lot of flower petals. They had made a large basket of them, you know. And so I baptized each of the parents. And I had to say, what name do you call yourself by? And then I would reinterpret that name into spiritual qualities, into spiritual colors. And every one of them went away just illumined. They went away revealed of the divinity that was within them. Now, was that a blessing to me? Wow. Was that a blessing to them? It certainly was. And do they just love me to pieces? Almost as much as I love them. They are super fantastic, I tell you. But you see, this is what happens. When you give so much from yourself, when you give so much from your heart without expecting anything in return, the gift that comes to you in a way that you certainly would never expect is so glorious and so fantastic, you cannot even believe it. You cannot even believe it. And I gave the 3-hour meditation to the groups many times. And they would come at 3 o'clock in the morning and sit there for 3 hours. And the first hour we'd say, I am God, God I am, I am God, God I am, for a full hour. And the second hour we'd say, why I can say I am God. I can say I am God because that's all there is, and you know, sort of understanding it. And the third hour, we would listen to ourselves speaking as God to ourselves. And they came there, as well as many other places. They came and they sat on the floor. They stayed overnight so that they could be there in the morning at 3 o'clock. And it was glorious. In Guyana, in South America, we went into this one church, and the churches meet at 6 in the morning, at 8 in the morning, at 10 in the morning, and at 2 in the afternoon, something like that. And the same people go to all the different churches. They all go to these churches. It's wonderful. There's a full house every place. But very busy. And so we went to each church and spoke and were giving it. And so we had the 3-hour meditation at Carol Oliver's church. And we went into her house. We stayed overnight at her house there. And so in the morning we went down about 2:45.
We told them the latest they should be there at 10 to 3. And then the doors would be closed.
Mm-hmm. So the room was full. Sitting on the hard concrete floor, just ordinary concrete like it's on the sidewalks out here. Sitting on the hard concrete floor. Some had pillows, some didn't. And they sat there, and they had been there for an hour, many of them, because you know they had to walk, because the transportation wasn't running at that time. But they got there. They got there. The room was full. And then we did the 3-hour meditation. And it was fantastic. Those people were lifted up beyond all measure. And over the years, since 1975, I've been ordaining people down in Guyana, Africa. There's some 35 ministers or whatever down there. It's fantastic. And Ellen's been going down and ordaining ministers too down in Africa, that is in South America. And it is, and Africa. So we have been just having a great time. Plus, we're doing this in Europe. In Europe, we have a lot of interesting people there.
I don't want to be a minister. I don't even know what a minister is. I only know what a priest is, you know, because it's only the Catholic Church and a few Protestants here, and I don't want to be a minister. I don't want to be a minister. I don't want to be a minister. And we like it when people say that, because that's, they mean they really want to be a minister.
Now, after a few years of taking the courses and so on, I want to be a minister. And so we're ordaining them as ministers. And what do we got, 10, 12 of them over there in Europe, in Switzerland, in Germany, in Italy, and France, and so on, and Austria. Well, one woman, she was right next to being ordained. She just about finished every little thing, and we were not going to be back for a year. So we gathered her together with the rest of the group, and we said, we're ordaining you too. And she says, wow, you know, wow, her heart's desire. She said, I wasn't quite done yet. I said, write down, period, and then you're done. She had everything that far along. All she had to do is just finish a sentence, you know. And so, Rosalie, remember? Yeah, and so, you see, this is so fantastic. It's so fantastic. Everybody knows they're a minister. All eternally a minister. Everybody knows they're divine. Everybody knows they're wonderful. And we know it too. Now, we sometimes forget. And because we forget, we do not express the magic and the divinity that we are. When we start remembering, then we express the magic and divinity that we are. Now, if we, who are so wonderfully good, so damn good, if we who are so wonderfully good, forget, just imagine the rest of the world and how much they appreciate our reminding them, you're fantastic, you're whole and perfect, you're glorious. What a wonderful minister you are. You go into everybody's home and you make them just feel good. What a wonderful minister you are. You look at the world at the 10th tee, not the 18th, but the 10th tee, and you say, hey, you're the greatest golfer that ever struck a ball. And the guy had been doing poorly up to that point. And from that point on, hole-in-ones. You know? And you, and you, and you, we all walk around the world blessing every single person we talk to, uplifting them by our uplifted presence within us, healing them by our healing light, because then they say, yes, it is possible. Are you a healer?
Absolutely, yes.
No, everything is whole and perfect.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not a healer. Everything is already whole and perfect.
Huh?
After you give them a pause.
Well, I'm giving them a pause in 3 minutes.
Oh,
right. You know, it's an hour and a half. Yeah. Now, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you see, this is the point. This is the point. We are so accustomed to saying, I am a healer. But if you really are a healer in the essence of the word we're using it, you see them already whole and perfect. You are fantastic. You are glorious. You are beautiful. You are great. You are young chickaroos, you know, having a ball, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah.
And Lawrence Welk, notwithstanding, you know. Okay. We will take a pause and come back, let's say, at 1:45. See, that gives you a couple minutes to take a breather. And then we'll set the stage for the finale of our sharing together today in this lovely seminar.
Oh.
We'll see you in a few minutes.